and welcome back to an exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a fabulous guest all the way from LA who brought me another film, which I'm very excited about to talk about. Chloe Trakos is in the house.
Was I Hi. Yeah, that's how you say it.
Okay, I got it right. So welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Simon. Thanks a lot.
So I guess we can start off. What have you been doing? Like Devil's Cove was what, 2 years ago, I think?
Yes. So, I literally went straight from Devil's Cove onto this one, introducing Jodea. And we were very, very lucky. We literally wrapped shooting 2 weeks before lockdown. So, that was a godsend. And, and then just the last year with the lockdown, we were working on the edit and now we're getting out there.
So you wrote this film. Did you write Devil's Cove too? Honestly, I can't remember.
I did. I wrote both. Yes.
Okay. So do you like to write projects just for yourself, or do you write projects for other people too?
I write about stuff that inspires me. So yes, well, this one obviously inspired me just because the whole film industry thing, I was taking a lot of that from experience. But I write anything that inspires me. Does not have to necessarily have myself in it. Yes.
Now, do you find it easier though to write for yourself as opposed to someone else then?
As opposed to someone else writing for me, or, you know, or, that's an interesting question, because it's funny. It's like sometimes, I think it's about 50-50, because I think, sometimes I write lines and then, you know, someone else will, the director, someone will say it a different way, and I'll be like, oh yeah, that does sound a whole lot better than the way I imagined it being said. So it's 50-50 either way. Yeah.
Okay. So you've written your script and you've hired, do you get any choice on the director you work with, or when do you collect your money and you say, okay, or do you go to the company and they pick the director?
Oh, I mean, well, basically it is, basically with this one, it was all me. This one had a long history of directors, because I brought it to LA. This was my passion project before Devil's Cove. I brought it to LA and we went through three directors, because, the initial plan was to make it on a much bigger budget, and that just wasn't happening. And then eventually, the last director we had was a wonderful guy, really, really good, but he needed to work on something bigger budget. And I said, look, I want to get this movie made. And you know what, being a female in Hollywood, it's like, yeah, if we wait another 10 years for the funding, you might get the funding and they'll say, well, sorry, Chloe, but you're way too old for this role. You know, we need someone younger. And I was kind of like, this is my role. I'm married to this role. So, and the director was wonderful about it and said, no, I totally understand. So then John, who directed it, is a very dear friend of mine. He's directed me before. And he is well known for being a horror director, but he also has a fanatical skill with writing romantic comedies. And so he actually worked with me on an early draft of this. So when I needed a director, when we slashed the budget, he was the perfect choice, because he's someone who can shoot low budget but make it look expensive. And also it was a chance for him to get out of the horror type cast thing. So we sponsored him for a visa. He came over and he was wonderful. And just, he got the project, which was great, which was so important to me. Yep.
So you just mentioned something, you slashed the budget. Now, is this before you have funding? You say, okay, I need, for the sake of my argument, $100,000. And you're going down to like $50,000. So you're taking half your budget out? Or did you have a budget?
When I say slash the budget, I mean we slash what the budget is in our heads. Okay. I think we started off, when I first came out with it, it was going to be like $7 million. And then we cut it to, okay, well, we're not getting anyone for this, let's cut it down to $3 million. And then it was like down to one. And then it was like, so we ended up like, this is now, and we ended up shooting for around the $100,000 mark. But, it was just what we had to do.
Okay. Let's get a little bit more into the film. I want to start right off that your office pretty much for this film is a motorhome.
Sure. Yes. That's the Gervais home. Yep.
So who'd you steal a motorhome from, or do you have friends?
We had the producer who came on board. What a wonderful guy, Lou Pizarro, knows everything and everyone, and he is just wonderful because he knows how to do deals. And I would just say we need a motorhome, and he'd say, "Right, I got you a motorhome." So it was just with everything. So that was how we got it. We got a guy who had a motorhome, and it was just, and then we just decked it out with stuff Jodea had in her house, like the photos and the movie posters. And that was it.
Now, when you're sitting there, I think Jodea has a very good relationship with her landlord. Had you worked with that gentleman before, or is this the first time you met him? Did you guys seem to work?
And that's so funny. Yeah. Brian is wonderful. We had a great cast, fantastic cast, but I, out of everyone, I think Ryan was probably the one I was closest to. He's a wonderful guy, and he completely just got Harold. He got, when we were auditioning people for Harold, a lot of people, most of the people, in fact, 90% who auditioned didn't get him, and they played him gay. Ryan just got him, and he got everything that he was about. And so it was great. Yeah. We definitely connected as people. Yep. I had never worked with him again, but I want to work with him again. He's very, very talented.
So most people came in casting him as gay. I never took him as gay at any time.
No, neither did I. I don't get where that came from, but a lot of people a lot of actors that just seemed to be the way they came across at the audience. They just, it was how they interpreted it. But yeah.
Okay, that leads me into a question I want to ask. I mean, Harold brings up Malcolm X considerably throughout the book. Now, is it you are a Malcolm X fan, or is that lead actor, Harold, the character, the man that plays Harold, a fan of Malcolm X?
That was the character Harold. That was the character Harold. Harold is actually based on a real person, one of my very dear friends, who is a complete intellectual, completely, how do I say it? What's the word I'm looking for? Intellectual, but very bad socially, So he so he'll go up to a black person and go, "Oh, Malcolm X is a good movie," or something, he'll go right up to someone and start talking about the thing he should not be talking about, that's.
There's nothing wrong with talking about Malcolm X. It's a fabulous film.
It is a fabulous film. I know.
So did you enjoy writing about your friend then? Like, obviously you're taking from people you know, and this person probably knows it's them then.
I don't know if he does know what's out. He's actually not that internet savvy. So I kind of have lost contact with him because last time I checked, he didn't even have a mobile phone. And I tend to keep in touch with everyone via texting, WhatsApp, Facebook. I had fun writing that character because the friend who he's based on has done stuff way worse than what Harold's done. There's so many stories about him. And I just, and for a while I've wanted to put him in a script because he is so entertaining. But yeah, that's.
Now, your athleticism comes into handy numerous times as you go in and out of your own personal car.
Yes, that's right.
Now, whose idea was to put you in such a grueling technique? Because I'm sure you didn't get that in the first shot every time.
That actually wasn't too hard. I did write it that way. I wanted it, I wanted this movie to portray the rich and poor of Hollywood. And I thought, we want her to be really poor. So, and then as it turned out, the car we ended up getting, you could open the door, but it was really hard. So it was easier anyway. And it was a really funny, it is a funny thing visually to have. Where it came from. But yes, it wasn't too hard jumping in and out. It was fine. I guess I'm pretty fit. I do work out.
Well, that's good. Because I haven't got to work out for 3 months because it's locked out. So I'm probably not as fit as I used to.
Well, I got, if you can see behind me, this behind me is my elliptical, which saved me. I couldn't have gone through lockdown without that.
I don't have one. It's at the gym, but I'll get back there.
Yes.
You bring up stuff. I'm just bringing stuff from the film so people know.
Sure,
have
sure,
you ever worked on a toxic set? Could you do discuss that as a character?
Working on a toxic set?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I've worked on, I wouldn't say I've ever worked on a full toxic set before, but I have worked on several movies where there's always been one toxic character who has made things difficult for everyone else. So,
How do you cope with that then?
It is very, very hard. I think I did one movie. Basically it's like everyone, you kind of pull together in both cases. It was usually a minority. It was only one person in each case. And, it's kind of a case you work with everyone else and you tend to do things like, you know, crack jokes about the person behind their back as a way of survival, depending on how much power they have. But usually it's like, yeah, especially if it's low budget, you can't just get rid of people because it's especially if they are, you know, good at what they're doing, because you're not going to just find someone. So you kind of just have to put up with it and humor them and then just sort of say to yourself, I'm never working with that person ever again.
Fair enough. Now, we do got to discuss your ramen restaurant. I think we'd be leaving that alone. What is it really? A ramen restaurant that serves coffee? Now, that one threw me off. Is that an LA thing?
It's one of these places where this is another guy who, you know, as you see in the film, is a frustrated filmmaker himself. And is kind of just trying to make up, just trying to make ends meet. So he does a bit of everything. So he sells coffee, he sells ramen, he sells,
So what is it really? Is it really a ramen shop? I would say
it is a ramen shop. Yes.
It really is.
Yes. And they did sell coffee. Yep. So it's.
Wow. Okay. Things you know. So did you learn how to make ramen then during your film or no?
Oh, no. I didn't have a clue. That was actually. Nope. The ramen was actually added into the shots afterwards. That was a post-production thing.
Really?
Yes. That was
And also at the beginning of the film, so I'm not ruining anything for anybody, you're a script supervisor of some kind, or you're craft services, aren't you? I'm not really sure.
FPA. I'm just a personal assistant. I'm just pretty much everyone's slave, like do this, do that, do that. So yeah.
So what crew work can you do, if any?
Me? I can do that. I can run. I can do script supervision. I can basically do anyone can do the PA thing. And then there's stuff which I've done on shorts films and other projects before, like, you know, continuity, stuff like that. Definitely not the technical stuff. I wouldn't even want to try that. But I wouldn't want to try makeup either. I can pretty much do like the stuff that's a lot more straightforward.
Fair enough. Now, did you guys pick, or did you personally pick The Last Time I Saw Paris?
I mean, that turned out to be one of the movies that is in the,
domain.
Domain. And so there were a whole lot of movies in the domain. I looked up and then I decided to watch a whole lot of them. And that one I loved. And I thought, yeah, this one's perfect. And it had good lines in it, which we quote. And so, so that was how we ended up with that one. Yep.
So do you both like modern and classic movies then, should I assume?
Me and Jodea or me and
just
Zach?
Just
me. I love my movie. Loving comes from, ranges from, old classics to modern to, I'm a movie buff. So, yes.
Oh, you're a movie buff. Though we can really have a question here. We're really
going to
face off. Now, being a movie buff, would you consider you have to watch all the Oscar best pictures, all the leading? How far do you take your Oscar watch?
That's an interesting question. I used to always go and watch everything nominated. Like, it was like a religion to me. Obviously, the last year I couldn't do that because there was nothing on at the theaters. So that's kind of like, I haven't been able to that last year. But generally, yes, I tend to watch everything, especially the the things that have been nominated for the best actress, best picture, I always try and watch. So yes, I do take that seriously. I do try and go, see it. And even if I have to make time during the day or whenever, I'll try to see everything.
Fair enough. So which Superman, Henry Cavill or Christopher Reeve?
I'm a Christopher Reeve fan.
Now, in the film, at times, you have to learn to become a better actress. I mean, I don't think I'm really ruining anything here.
No.
Is it hard to act badly?
It's so funny you say that. The first time we did this, John actually had to say to me, Chloe, you're actually acting well. When we were just rehearsing, he said, you've got to give it more. You've got to be over the top. And I had to then really think about it and be like, this is just someone who hasn't been taught right. She's been taught all these, and she thinks that by being overly dramatic and stuff, I don't want to say it sounds hard. I wouldn't say it was hard, but I did worry about overdoing it and making it look too unrealistic. But then at the same time, it's kind of the overdoing thing, which makes it funny. So,
Well, I just think it's weird because if people know your work, I know how well you can act is what I'm trying to say. And watching you act badly was like, this doesn't make sense to me. Chloe's better than that. It was so confusing for me as a viewer who knows your work.
That's funny. Thank you. Thank you so much. No, I got to say the part which I was worried about was doing the transformation from bad actress to good actress. I didn't want to just go bad, good. I wanted to make that transformation be convincing. So that was the part that I struggled with. But yeah.
So when you're writing the script, you have a voice in your head, obviously, is talking to you.
Yes.
So when you're typing, I need to act badly. Does your voice change or do you still use that voice? It's definitely a different feeling.
I got to think about that. Hold on. You could say the voice does change.
So when you're looking for a role, when you haven't written it and you get a script in hand, do you take on that persona? Do you have a voice for that character in head or do you wait till you go the process of casting and go
When I'm auditioning and stuff, I find I have to read the side several times before I can get an idea of the character. And then yes, usually I envision them with a certain persona, certain voice and stuff. You get actors who are just amazing who will just look at a thing once and immediately attribute a character, characteristics, which I need to look at it several times and work out what it's about. And then from there, attribute voice and all of that.
Now your leather jacket, I noticed, makes a return. Was that pre-planned? Was it pre-planned to have your leather jacket?
I think that was just the thing I thought worked for the scene. I thought, she's meant to be a sort of, badass fighter and, that wasn't really pre-planned. That just worked out that way. Yeah.
So the leather jacket's made two appearances now, I can state, Devil's Cove and Introducing Judea.
Right. Well, actually, this is a different leather jacket, but my cat peed on my last one and I had to throw it out because I couldn't, no matter how many times I got it cleaned, the smell of cat pee stayed with it. So I had to get rid of it.
It looks exactly the same, though.
Oh, it is the same. I mean, it's the same style. I mean, I'm an Amazon shopper. So I just go back into my Amazon, past things, buy this again, and it's the same one. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this is a personal question. I mean, you've obviously hit people in movies.
Yes.
Have you ever hit anybody in real life?
When I was little, obviously you hit your sister all the time when you're a kid. Once at a bar, I don't think I was particularly drunk, but a guy came up to me and I was living in Australia at the time, and a guy came up to me and he made fun of my Zimbabwean accent. And so I hit him. It wasn't really hard or anything. It was more like shut up, but it was that's probably, It wasn't like a skilled hit, like like that, yeah. That I had to learn.
You may not want to answer this question. What's the longest it took you to take a take during this film?
You know, ironically, I can't remember how long it was because we were on a push start, so I can't give you an idea. But the ones that took the longest ended up being the one when in the scene when Zach's shooting Jodea and she has to hit Ethan and she's getting the lines wrong because she's just seen Isabella. It wasn't a deliberate thing. You know, it wasn't a method acting thing. I actually ended up just messing everything up and it just went on and on forever. And so like a lot of the anxiety you see me going through in that scene was legit. It was, I kept messing it up. I couldn't tell you time wise. It would like, to me, it seemed like at least over an hour, but it was probably less than that because we had gone.
So does that work you up not getting something right? Cause I mean, you know, the lines, you wrote the script, so it's all there.
Yes, it does. It does. It works me up, especially if, you know, you're on a and it's like, oh my God, I'm holding everyone up. So yeah, it does work me up. It, you know, I do get upset if I feel like I'm messing up. And in that one, I did legitimately mess up.
Now, how many Aqua tank tops do you own after this film?
Aqua tank. Yeah, it's my favorite color. So I own a lot. I own one, two. Yeah, I probably own about five of them. But yeah, I do. I always buy things in. Yes.
Now, I just more stuff in the film. Are most agents easy to deal with, or most of them are pain in the butt? Because I have no idea.
Most of them are assholes. Which is where the Grant character comes from. It was kind of like, you know, usually only thinking of their 10%. And it's like, I think any filmmaker, you know, not just actors, but also like producers, directors. It's almost like if you have a script you want to get to the star, it's always like, oh, how can we get it then without going through the agent? But yeah, they are. So Grant is very much sort of, all about the money. You know what? A lot of, you know, he kind of is the personification of what a lot of these agents are. It's all about the money. It's all about the image of the film. You know, Zach can't break up with Isabella because that's going to ruin his image. You know, it's all about that. So pretty much, I'm sure not all agents are like that. I have several good friends who are agents and are very lovely. And in fact, my husband is actually an ex-agent, so I shouldn't say that. But there are a lot, I mean, generally, you do deal with a lot of assholes with the agencies. Yep.
Now, have you ever got offered a role and you've refused it?
No. Yeah. When I was a student, I got offered, I was very enthusiastic and I saw a sign at my college for a film and I just wanted to be in it. So I just showed up and it turned out it was pornography. It wasn't pornography. It was virtually pornography. It was like they wanted me to take my clothes off and be like, but it was very funny because at the time I didn't even have a driver's license yet. And I can remember saying, I don't think this is right for me. And they were literally pleading with me, like, please do it. Please do it. We can't, you know, they'd obviously struggled to cast the role. And I think I just ended up running out. But I think that's the only time. I shouldn't say that. Usually if I'm offered things before which have clashed with another project I'm doing. And so then, yes, I usually say no. But I'm never someone who says, oh, no, I can't do that. You know, I don't like that character. You know, and I think actors who do that are silly because, you know, it's like you need to take every role you can get. And if someone thinks you're right for something, you say thank you and you do it, you know, and that, yeah.
Something I always like to ask, something I personally cannot do well, crying on screen. Is that easy? Do you have a place you go to or you can just do it on the spot?
I'm not someone who can cry at will. I can bring up the emotions, but the tears aren't always easy. So for the one crying scene, the one in the theater, Our makeup artist had this stuff, which was like peppery stuff, which she put under my eyes, but they literally, my eyes went crazy. They were just like, and then for the second one, which was me in the deli crying, she had another that was just drops, but yes. I'm not one of these who can cry on. Well, I know there are so many actors who can, and I admire that so much. I've seen actors who've cried at auditions and it's incredible, but there's just usually eye drops do the trick.
So that's the secret. If I need to cry, just somebody eye drop.
Yes. Yeah. Eye drops. Don't go. If a makeup artist talk there, don't do anything with a pepper spray thing. That's awful.
So I'm just going to go back to your writing process from beginning to end. How long does that take you? I mean, you have a full-time job, you have to work.
Interesting. It's like, we see this project. The idea came to me about 10 years ago, 10 years before we shot. So, and it was something which it wasn't like a solid idea for a while. It was like, I could write it in a notebook, you know, famous director drives into the back of a car of a struggling actress. That was the first bit. And then a little bit more bits come, you know, like, oh, I'll teach her to act, you know, so it kind of like came to me on and off over the years while I was working on all kinds of other projects. So, and then it kind of like really only got solidified, say like about 5 years ago. And then I wrote it. I usually show it to someone who I trust, like John, who directed it, who is a very dear friend. He's also someone I trust with my scripts because he is ruthlessly honest. He's not like my mother who tells me everything I write's wonderful. But you know, yeah, but he is, and so I have like him and I have another friend who I go to and I review it, rewrite it. And then obviously it changes from when different people come on board. So like, as I said, with this, we went through three directors. The last one, was the one who came up with the idea of the speaker on the chair, which was brilliant. So that was his idea and that worked. And then, you know, so it's like, yeah, it's hard to say. It's like you have an idea, you write it, you show it to people, you change it. And then, but things are always going to change on set. It's just the way it is, you know. I mean, yeah. So, yeah.
So being a writer of the film, do you have a lot of control over the music over this film or no?
Yes. Well, this one I had control of the music because I'm a music. Music is one of the things I kind of really love to envision. And it's like, I'll hear a great song and be like, I want that song in my movie. So, and John was actually, that was the agreement we had. He was like, yep, you can choose the music. Well, he chose the music composer. He wanted the music composer for the, he chose the music composer and then I chose the montage songs. So that was kind of, that was our agreement and we worked with each other with that. Yeah.
Okay. I think I've done pretty good. And even
you've done amazing, yes.
So now it's time for your fun questions.
Sure. Go for it.
Since I've only ever seen you as a blonde, do you have a favorite hair color besides blonde?
I've been blonde my whole life. Obviously, as I was very blonde like this when I was a kid. And then, you know, when you get older, you give it a little help. I've always been, every role I've played, whether my own stuff or other stuff I've been cast in, I've always been blonde. I would love to try being a redhead or a brunette or anything. You know, if I got offered a role and I had to dye my hair, I'd be like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. I would love to see what else I could do. Yep. But yeah.
So you've never been asked that question. I know.
No, I haven't. No.
Since you love music so much, what gets you in the mood? Like, do you have exercise playlists? Do you have a walking playlist or it's always the same playlist?
Often when driving to set, I will play something that I think my character would listen to and I sing along to it. Also because I believe it helps my voice, because I'm someone, if I'm nervous on set, my voice can get really squeaky. But if I do like a warm up, like singing before, that helps. Getting into character, it's just also stuff like I usually dress like the character dresses and, say words of dialogue, that repeat words of dialogue and, stuff like that. Yep.
So what would Judea listen to then? Let's break that down.
I had her listening to No Doubt. That, to me, I saw as her.
A little more movie. Modern. I could see there's some Hall & Oates or something.
Yeah, I guess. I kind of saw her as a No Doubt girl, you know, indie, but cool. Yep. So, yeah, that's.
Now, this is going to be the one question I don't know if you've played because I haven't seen all your films. Do you have a certain genre you've never done and you're just waiting for that script to come to you?
A certain genre. I would love. Yeah. I mean, I think I would love to do a biopic. I would love to play a real life person in a biopic. I would absolutely love that. I haven't thought about who, but I would love to do like something, you know, just something, especially someone who's kind of like made a difference to the world, you know, that's a movie I would love to do.
Interesting. Okay. Before we let you go, you know what you get to do now? You get to tell everybody where they can find your wonderful film.
Yes. Well, right now it is, it's going to be screening at the Lamley, Lamley Theater. And, there is a Facebook page introducing Judea. If you just put it into Facebook, it will come up and it will give you all the details there. As yet we're not selling online. We're not online yet, but we are hoping to be after we just going to do this theatrical release. And then, you know, we will, God willing, be on Amazon and all of those things. But yeah.
You also can promote some other film you were in called Devil's Cove. If that's still available, they could get an introduction to you.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, it's a totally different genre, of course. I mean, I think that the Devil's Cove audiences might not necessarily like the Judea movie and vice versa. But Devil's Cove is on, it's on Tubi, it's on Hulu, it's on Amazon, it's pretty much if you put it into most, it should come up, Devil's Cove.
Thank you for your time as always and have a great evening.
Thank you so much. And really appreciate it. Bye.